Buccaneers fans, here is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. This is the podcast that bears his name, and it's a special edition today because Ira somehow is here not even 2 days after having hip replacement surgery. The man is unbelievable. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Plenty to chop up today, as Ira likes to say. Some insight into rookie minicamp, talk about the schedule, Jason Light, lots of other things going on here in the world of the Bucks as we march toward the preseason. And Bill Curry Ford, it's never preseason there. They're always rolling. Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Check them out at BillCurryFord.com. Now, they've got incredible offers. You can see them all there. But we have to emphasize family-owned dealership. The Curry family has owned the dealership 65 years. GM Sean Sullivan is like family. He runs the whole place. Good friend of ours. You've heard him here as our draft guru. And he loves giving Bucks fans the Ira Kaufman discount on top of all the other discounts that they have at Bill Curry Ford, including 0% financing. And they've also got a nationwide lifetime warranty on every new vehicle. Biggest service department in Florida, maybe the United States. It's incredible. The remodel that's been done there, the reimagining that's been done there, and it all opened up this year. Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Email Sean, find him at the website, BillCurryFord.com, and you can ask him any question you want. He's your personal insider in the car business. It's like contacting Adam Schefter with a pipeline to ask him something about behind the scenes in the NFL. Sean wants to help you, and that's just a touch you're going to get at a family-owned dealership. Bill Curry Ford, all three of us own vehicles from Bill Curry Ford, all different kinds of vehicles that we all bought with our own money. BillCurryFord.com. We're proud to have them as part of the JoeBucksFan.com family. And as we get to the sage here, we will be coming back after this podcast with a special schedule edition Wednesday night. The official schedule comes out, and we're eager to sort of dissect it a little bit, see where the Bucks got a break, where they didn't, and we're fired up about that. We have a little schedule, a couple schedule predictions in this podcast as well. That is an important distinction that hasn't really been talked about too much as it relates to how the Bucks are being perceived out there. So we're excited about that. And as always, we're excited to talk about Florida's elite restoration. Storm season is here. June, it officially kicks in. You have to have a disaster plan for when storm damage hits your property. You saw all the storms that have blown in just this week alone. And it's not just storms. Mold, fire, flood, water damage is horrific in properties. You need to know who to call immediately before you call your insurance company at your home or at your place of business. That is Florida's Elite Restoration, also family owned. Josh Martin, big Bucks fan. His family and his team services the entire Bay Area with the latest technology. They're going to give you a free evaluation of your disaster at your property. They'll respond 24/7. And they'll give you an Ira Kaufman discount. All you have to do is mention Ira or Joe Bucks fan when you first call to get that free assessment, free evaluation. And if you need their services going forward, if you want them to battle with your insurance company to get all the money you deserve and that are paying for to restore your property, they'll give you $500 back if you use their service. And maybe that's cash for your deductible or just cash back if you're paying for the repair and restoration yourself. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there. Don't forget, just bookmark it, read it now, and then you know who to call or know who to refer to a friend or family member. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. All right. So here he is. He didn't even need a couple of days out of the bullpen or a week in the minors and AAA. He's just right into the big show, not even 36 hours from surgery. Ira, I can't believe you're even here.
You know, Steve, kudos to Morton Plant Hospital, downtown Clearwater. Lee, it's a bit of a drive for me, but they wanted me at 5 in the morning. I was first up for surgery, hip replacement, left side. It's been bothering me for years, and I finally said I got to take care of it. Hats off, very organized. And the best thing about it, Lee, I don't remember a blessed thing. Once they started pumping me with that stuff and they put a mask over me, for breathing. And the next thing I knew, Lee, I was in the recovery room 2 hours later, and it went smooth. And as of now, and I don't want to jinx myself, Lee, because I've been known, Buck fans are still pissed off, Lee, every time I mention how lucky the Bucks have been with injuries over the last 5 years to their key personnel. And they say, Ira, stop talking about it. So, Lee, I don't want to do it to myself, but so far, the pain's been very manageable. They say day three is the worst, so we shall see. But as of now, Lee, while I'm talking to you two guys, and very glad to do it, to talk all things Buccaneers on our wonderful podcast. So far, so good. Now, when we talk again, after the Bucs schedule comes out, things could have changed. But as of now, on a scale of 10, the pain's like a 1 or a 2. So I'm glad I got it done, guys, and it's behind me.
You'll be on the tennis court shortly, Ira. Ira, you brought up something that I think goes back further than 5 years. You're talking about how fortunate the Bucs have been with injuries. Well, you look at the offensive line. I know Ryan Jensen, that was a horrible injury. Take away Ryan Jensen, you can go back to just about Lovie Smith and look at that offensive line. They've really never had major injuries outside of Ryan Jensen since Lovie was around, I think. I mean, you can go way back.
You are sure right.
You know, you can even say, Levante David, for example, a guy's been here forever. I think he had one nasty injury where he missed like 4 or 5 games.
Yes.
That might have been 2017, possibly. It was at Minnesota he got hurt. He had to be wheeled off the field. I remember that because I was up there. But other than that, he's been fortunate with injury. By and large, the Bucs, I think, have been very fortunate when it comes to injuries. Sure, they've had some injuries.
You're absolutely right, Lee. And Steve, two quick points. One, you could say their medical staff's very good, which I think it is, Steve. But let's be honest. Once they take the field, somebody rolls somebody's leg and knee, that's not, the medical staff can't do anything about that, Steve. So fortune plays the biggest role. You know, the stuff that goes on in the trenches, like Lee was saying with the offensive line. Steve, Marpet and Donovan Smith came around in 2015, and neither of them ever suffered a significant injury. And Steve, you saw my column a couple weeks ago about the quarterbacks. I mean, that is an incredible statistic. Back to 2017, 2018 doesn't count, Steve, doesn't count, because the Fitzpatrick Winston suspension season, that had nothing to do with injuries. The waffling between the quarterbacks, nothing. So now you're talking 2017 when Winston, I think, missed 3 games, Lee, in the middle of the season. Steve, when you see what's going on all around the league with quarterbacks, and I don't, look, I'm not wishing Baker Mayfield to get hurt, but that's why I wrote that column about the backup quarterbacks, because if a guy goes out for a month, not a year, but a month, you want to stay above water, Steve.
They haven't been decimated on offensive line like you see, 3 or 4 or 5 teams every year, but they have had their share. Even after Lovie, you had J.R. Sweezy before he even put on a uniform. They paid him big money and he didn't get on the field. We take it for granted.
Carl Nix, Steve, Carl Nix. Remember Carl Nix? That was another one.
Carl Nix, of course. And you also look at what happened to Alex Kappa in the Super Bowl run. Now he was replaced beautifully, but that could have been catastrophic. We wouldn't be saying that right now. And the bench has been there for them with little bits of injuries. Look, Ryan Jensen played some left guard in the Super Bowl year. We had, A.Q. Shipley started a couple of games. So they've done a good job. But by and large, you're absolutely right, Ira. Health has been there. Nobody's needed a new hip on the offensive line. I'm just amazed, Ira, that you, Sage has surgery on a Monday morning. He's texting me Monday evening. This is unbelievable. Podcast, when are we rolling here, buddy? Did you go out to eat tonight? Ira, the word on the street was you went out to dinner already. Is that correct?
How did you know that, Steve? We just got back from dinner. You're right. Lee, when my son comes in from Cleveland, I got to treat him to dinner.
What's that Chinese place you go to?
No, we went to a sushi place, but, other than Sam picking up the check and I left a nice tip. No, I'm kidding.
Ira, it's okay. After hip surgery, there is something called takeout. You don't have to get out there and hassle the waitress,
right.
But you're incredible, incredible.
Hey, by the way, and I don't know if you guys get the same kick out of it that I do, but Jason Light is cracking me up, Lee. He's just cracking me up. Lee, I'm not sure that there's a radio interview that he's turned down in the last month.
Well, hey, Ira, I got to ask you a question about that. Do you think at some point this could backfire on the Bucs organization? Because Light is out there screaming constantly, pounding his chest, We heard it, you know, on the Pat McAfee show last week. Big interview, long interview. And yeah, he's pounding his chest. No respect, no respect, no respect. At some point, somebody's got to take responsibility for that at $1. The Glazers at some point are going to be like, well, you know, we kind of had a dip in our season on the field and we don't get any respect anyway. Maybe we're not seeing everything and the analysts are. I don't know. It feels kind of weird to the extreme they're going.
I know what you mean. And Lee, I think it's getting a little old. Lee, in this respect. Now, look, winning the division, Lee, I don't want to take away from it. But, Lee, the facts are the facts. You saw my column the other day about the NFC South, how woeful it's been for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a cumulative winning season in like 5 years. And that counts the 2 years, you know, that the Bucs were winning a lot of games with Brady. So, Lee, you know, they're 500 over the last 2 years. Let's not go crazy. To me, the most impressive thing was, you know, humiliating the Eagles and playing a good game against Detroit. Lee, that's impressive. But not the 9-8, Lee. Not the 9-8 and the struggling against Carolina and losing badly to New Orleans in a big game. Lee, I think it's getting a little old. Bowles has weighed in on it a little bit. I think Mayfield also feels disrespected. But, you know, Lee, to me, that NFC South thing comes with a little bit of an asterisk, Lee. It does.
I see what you're saying a little bit. I think it's getting old for you and maybe for Steve. I sort of see what you're saying about getting old, but I was texting Steve about this yesterday. There's some people we know that, my gosh, they Twitter the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over. It's like, calm down, people. And then, like Steve said, holy, not everybody sits on Twitter all day long like we do. And I think that's the same case with Light. We're absolutely dialed in every word Jason Light says. He doesn't really do that many interviews, but we hear him say the same stuff over and over and over and over again. We think that's all he talks about. And, you know, it's only because that we're so dialed in. Now, to be fair to Light, McAfee sort of set him up. I don't think Light even brought the subject up until McAfee asked him about it. And then he's like, well, yeah, and then he jumped right in. So I don't think Light is specifically, you know, going to every NFL media source. I don't think he's been on NFL Network, for example. And the very first thing he talks about, he starts screaming about the damn media that's always predicting woe for us when we're in the playoffs. And I don't think that's in the front of his mind. They bring it up, and he you know, he follows up and agrees with it.
I think you're right, Lee. And Steve, to be fair to Jason, he's got a good sense of humor, Steve. He's got a good sense of humor. He brought up witness protection the other day, which is it's a funny line. Steve, and, you know, he doesn't take himself that seriously. I think that's a good quality for Jason Light. But, Steve, I'll give you an example of how some Buck fans have taken this, I think, to the extreme. Steve, didn't you see maybe until a couple of days ago that some people were seriously suggesting that the Chiefs season opener should be against the Bucks? I remember seeing some of that, and they weren't kidding. They were serious about it. And, Steve, I hate to break this on Joe Bucks fan to our listeners, but, Lee, you know I'm right. The Bucks don't have that kind of cachet. You're not going to compare that to the rematch against the Ravens. I mean, come on, you're not.
Well, Ira, I think it's fair that they could have been in the conversation. I'll tell you why. Number one, the Chiefs opened against the Lions last year. I don't think this year's Bucks are any less impressive than last year's Lions, so I have to throw that out there. And at least there's a history, right? They did meet in the Super Bowl, and there's at least a little bit you can play with there, and Mayfield's a high-profile guy. I didn't think it was going to be the network's first choice, but I didn't think it was way off the radar.
Well, Steve, you got to couple that with Light saying that they're disrespected. So in that regard, it wasn't going to happen. But, Lee, you can't argue against Baltimore. And they could have had Cincinnati, which I think the Chiefs play in Week 2.
Yeah, they're going to make sure Joe Burrow's healthy.
Yeah. So if Joe Burrow's healthy, I mean, that's a hell of a team. Steve, I'm not sure you're right that Detroit in 2022, Steve, they came on strong. They came on strong.
Ira, you're like feeding Jason Light here. The Bucks won 6 out of 8 to close last season.
Yeah, they did. They did win 6 out of 8, Steve. They did. But they finished 9-8. I don't remember what Detroit's record was that season. Yeah, you're right, Steve. Detroit was, they were coming on, but they weren't considered an elite team. Now I think Detroit is considered an elite team.
Yeah, if you remember, the Lions were 9-8, and they beat the Packers to end the season. Neither team made the playoffs, and that was that. It was like a Cinderella comeback.
But
you know, we got to do
this. Part of this with Light and the disrespect and all that. Part of it is a lot of the stuff he says isn't meant for us. What I mean by that is, I think this is just a GM being a GM. They like to rattle off roster names. You know, oh, Jose Ramirez, the guy's so damn good he can't even get on the roster. He's not talking to us. You know, he's talking to his players through Pat McAfee, through Rich Eisen, through whomever, fill in the blank. So he's looking at the bigger picture. I don't think he really cares if me or Ira or whomever or someone in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, does want to hear about the seventh-round draft pick. Light's looking out for his own players. And they eat that up. Oh, my general manager's got my back. He sees that. We're being pissed on. Oh, those a-holes, you know.
Steve, I just want to give you a little tidbit because I know this will lead to one of your questions and one of your areas of interest tonight. Steve, I got a text from a guy that all three of us know. He's got no axe. He doesn't hate the Bucks. He doesn't love the Bucks. And I like talking to him. I try to call him there once a month just to run some things past him. And, Steve, I got a text from him today, and he said, all that money for a safety, Ira, for a safety. And I answered him, Steve, and I said, he's not just a safety. He might be the best safety, and he does so much for this team. Lee, it's a lot of money. I remember when Jensen was the highest paid center, and now I guess Winfield. But based on what I saw and his age, and I'm not even sure he can't even get better. I think he's coming. I don't even think he's in his prime. I'm not crying about Winfield's contract, Lee. I'm not.
No. I can see why people might get triggered by that. But, you know, Brian McFadden, who works for CBS now, he said last night about Winfield, he said he's not just the best safety. He may be one of the best defenders in the league, period.
Wow.
I don't think he's that off base. You know, look at all the things he can do, he being Winfield. Look at all the things he can do, and he does them well. You know, he defends the run. He can sack the quarterback. He blitzes. He obviously makes he forces takeaways, critical takeaways, too. And he's done that since he was a rookie. Look at how he did in the playoffs. He won against the Saints, too, a game that literally changed the game in a playoff. Yes. So I don't think McFadden's off base saying that. I really don't. You know, when people get all bent out of shape about salary, oh, you can't pay this guy this much. What's expensive today is cheap in 2 years.
Well said, Lee. Well said. Steve, should we hold Winfield to the standard that he set in 2023? Steve, to me, it's almost like, well, wait a minute. You expect Devin White to get 9.5 sacks every year like he did in 2020? Steve, that's a very high standard for Antoine Winfield.
Well, look, it's probably a career year. And Sage, you changed the subject on me. I have to bore in a little bit more. It's what we do. I can't let you off the hook on a couple of these things. But we were going to talk about Winfield tonight. Now, it's guaranteed 2 years, $45 million. So there's no fluff in there. And Mike Florio was making a big deal about that today. You know, he's always looking at these contracts, figuring out where it's bogus agent speak as to how much money they're making. But that's not the case here. He's making that cash. And, you know, there is a history, though, in the league of certain positions that that sort of top out. That, yeah, when you pay a guy top money, maybe it's not a bargain later. And safety was a position, Ira, that not even 2 months ago we were talking about and the league was talking about. The Athletic wrote big features on it. Safety was a devalued position. The guys are getting paid less and less. More of them are sitting out in free agency. That's why
White, like running back, right, Steve? Like running back.
Running back had been for a while. And, you know, the Revis contract that the Bucks gave him, it took a long, long, long time for someone to make that kind of money that he was making. And, you know, that's one reason that Jordan Whitehead got on the cheap because the safety market was dying out. I don't have a problem paying Winfield. You know, if you're overpaying him a few million dollars, that's okay, in my opinion, because, you know, the alternative is horrible and they don't have a pass rusher to pay. That's what this comes down to for me. They do not have a pass rusher to pay $20 million, $12 million. So, you know, you got to spend that money elsewhere if you don't have the edge rushers. And they probably think, okay, look, we guaranteed Winfield for 2 years. And if Yaya and the rookie Braswell work out, we don't have to pay them anything for 2 years. So it all works out. So that's probably how they're looking at it, at least the way these GMs look at paying by position and paying on either side of the ball. But I think your point is fair, Ira. It's probably a career year for Winfield last year, given all the plays. It's also, he played 17 games the two previous years. He had missed 8 games combined between injuries and concussions, but he's a great player and I'm happy about it. But I get that some fans think, you know, it's ridiculous. And, you know, it's not just the fans. I've heard other analysts saying, man, a safety, you know, those are mostly the older school guys who just can't believe you pay a safety that kind of money, but at least Bulls asked him to do a lot. It is interesting to me, Ira, that it 2 years ago, somehow the greatest safety in the game, they decided let's make him a nickel. Now it didn't work out.
Lee, I got a question for you regarding Winfield and the way Bulls is going to use him. Do you think without Devin White now being on the roster, and granted, Lee, White wasn't nearly as effective as a blitzer as he was years ago, but he was used extensively in that area, and Britt doesn't fit that mold. Lee, you think we'll see Winfield unleashed a little bit more in the backfield now that White's gone?
Possibly, but your question opens up a bigger question, I think. And I talked about this with Alex Marvez on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and I was just speculating last night, and I'm going to speculate here. This Tyke Smith, the Bucs draft, if you look at his game tape, he looks a whole lot like a physical Winfield. He looked like Winfield's tape at Minnesota. He's always around the ball. You know, they're talking about playing him at nickel corner. Well, Christian Eisen wasn't like he was a stiff out there. And I was trying to think on the fly. It was very difficult for me to do. With Marvez, I'm like, I don't know if Bulls is going to try something wacky like a three safety set at times. Because obviously, he wants to get Tyke Smith on the field. They've all said the kid's a safety. But there's no room at the end, so to speak. You know, Winfield isn't going anywhere. Jordan Whitehead's not going anywhere. Maybe, like you were talking about, bringing Winfield on a blitz. But it's very, very interesting, and I don't have an answer. I could only speculate. And to piggyback off of what you said about Devin White, you know, I was asked about Devin White on Marvez's show, Late Hits. And, you know, I said, this is really weird. And what I'm about to say, Ira, this comes from Rookie Minicamp. They tried out Kalen Deloach out there, you know, undrafted free agent. He'll be at training camp, but they love to push the guys that don't that have long odds, and I'm not into that. But right, to be right. Fair, the Bucks did have two guys, undrafted free agents, that made their team, one of which started. Well, this Deloach was saying he had a personal linebackers coach. It wasn't his position coach at Florida State. It was a personal linebacker coach. And so he's working out to get ready to hopefully get drafted. But, and by the way, Deloach is an inside linebacker. This coach kept popping tape in of a linebacker he wanted Deloach to emulate and study. And it happened to be, of all people, K.J. Britt. The Bucs get rid of their number 5 overall pick. His play just went off the cliff. Why that is, you know, people want to go rampant and guess. Be my guess. However, you get rid of White, you bring in Britt. We know Britt's pretty good against the run. But everybody thinks that's going to be such a weak spot. Now, there's no doubt about the Bucs are thinner than ice, paper thin at that position right now, depth-wise. However, the Bucs get rid of White. KJ Britt starts last year up in the Packers game, became the starter from then on. People think that's a weak link in the starting position. Yet this undrafted free agent was saying his personal coach was asking him to watch tape KJ Britt to learn how to play linebacker the right way. I guess Devin White wasn't playing the right way. Why was that? You can go all kinds of angles there.
Very interesting. I don't look at KJ Britt as a weak spot. I don't. Maybe I'm reading too much into his play. You know, he's not great maybe in coverage, and he's not a blitzer. But Steve, to me, the number one job of an inside linebacker is to be a run stuffer, in my opinion. Unless you're Levante David, who's, you know, a borderline Hall of Fame player, you know, like Roquan Smith, you know, the guy's all over the field making tackles. And I think it wouldn't shock me, Steve, if Britt stays healthy, if he gets 120 tackles next year. Mm. I think he's very disciplined, and I think he's got Bulls' confidence. Lee, where I disagree with you a little bit, but I understand where you're coming from, you talked about the depth behind Levante and Britt. That Servassier, Dennis, Lee, I know what you're going to say, and I can't disagree with you. He's not proven. He's not proven on the pro level. But I think they believe in him, Steve. I think they got confident.
Britt's made four starts. You know, people have paid attention a lot because of who he replaced. And he's been okay. You know, we'll see what it looks like. You know, I mean, you can't have depth at every position. No team does in the NFL. And so they trust these guys. They pretty much gave Dennis quite a stamp of approval by not drafting an inside linebacker. I will say inside linebacker is probably maybe the easiest position to pick up a veteran late in August. They're out there, and you know, maybe that's what happens. I mean, they did have Kevin Minter here for years, and he played a little bit, but a solid veteran backup. And those guys are around the league. So I don't know. I don't look at it as set in stone. This year will be a little bit different. Last year, of course, they had 13 rookies on the roster. There isn't even close to that many openings on this roster. So you know, it's a different animal this season. So Sage, rewinding a little bit, I just wanted to go back to the light thing. I know you said it getting a little bit old, and Lee kind of scolded you a little bit there that, you know, hey, it's more of a media perspective. And I agree. I don't think it's getting old. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. But my question to you more, Ira, was, you know, maybe that gets a little bit old for the Glazers, because, you know, if you take one little hiccup, all of a sudden you got ownership who's like, well, we keep hearing over and over again how we're under, how we're disrespected. But we're not playing very well. And you talked to Ira, you know, this was off the record conversation, but I was standing there with you having this discussion over as you were shoving egg rolls in your face, talking to Joel Glazer. We were having a nice chat about this subject. And you know, the Glazers take this subject pretty seriously. They're interested in it too. I don't know. It just feels like it's getting might be a little over the top eventually for ownership, unless the Bucks can back this thing up with a powerful fist here. I don't know. It just,
Steve, that's an interesting way to look at it from an ownership perspective. Lee and Light, you know, isn't the only one that's talked about this disrespect. Bowles talks about it too, Lee. He has, and he's mentioned it. And Lee, you're right. It's not something that he starts the conversation with, but when he's asked about it, you know, he doesn't hold back. And Lee, if you're going to argue that or suggest it, that you're not getting your proper due, and then you're starting 3-5, God forbid, this fall, doesn't that make the Glazers looking a little askew at what's going on in the front office and on the coaching sidelines when at the same time you're saying you're not getting your respect, Lee, and then you don't back it up on the field? It could be an interesting dynamic, Lee.
You could make the case where the Glazers are like, well, wait a minute here. You're 7-9, and you were talking like you're going to be You were going to be 10-7. Can you explain yourself here?
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting, Ira, especially from where we were last year, where the Bucks were kind of underselling everything. You know, we'll see how it goes, you know, that kind of stuff.
By the way, I got to ask this again, and I know it's old news, but I got to get your guys' perspective on this. Lee, you've heard me say this on more than one occasion when I look back at 2023. Absolute tunnel vision on the season. And I focus on one game. One freaking game out of 17. And it's the Atlanta game in Atlanta. And Lee, let me set up the scenario for you and tell me if I'm making too much of this, but the Bucks weren't 4-7. They were 5-7. I think they had beaten Carolina. No big deal to get to 5-7. Now, Lee, the Falcons were 6-6. The Bucks were a game behind. They had already lost to the Falcons in Tampa. And Lee, if the Bucks go 5-8 and now the Falcons are 7-6 and they're two games behind and they lose the tiebreaker by being swept, I think the Bucks are done. I think the Bucks are done at 5-8. They don't make the playoffs, and who knows about Bulls at that point.
Yeah.
And Lee, the Falcons never recovered. I think they finished 7-10, so they won only one more game down the stretch, and the Bucks took off. Except for the New Orleans, you know, debacle. Lee, do you agree that that was the game that determined the Bucs season?
Oh, yeah, I probably. I mean, I could also point to the Jaguars game where they actually looked like a playoff team. They pounded the Jaguars. I could point to that as well.
Jacksonville stunk down the stretch, Lee. They did stink.
But still, they pounded Jacksonville. You know, so they took a wounded animal and put it out of its misery. That's what good teams do. And we always say that, you know, be a good team, pound teams, you know, and they did. Well, that sort of sets up a bigger picture with Bowles. Maybe it's just me, but it sure seems Todd Bowles is much more relaxed this offseason than he was the previous offseason.
You're not seeing things, Lee. It was very nice not to have to think about Bowles and a coaching switch, Steve, again, for this organization once the season ended. Although, Steve, and I don't know if you brought it up, Steve. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but did you once say that if they get blown out by Detroit, Bowles could lose his job anyway? I don't remember if you said that, Steve. But once the season ended the way it did, with a very gritty effort at Ford Field, there was not going to be a coaching change in any manner, and I don't think it ever crossed the Glazers' mind.
All right, no, I never said that. I said that it is possible if they got blown out by the Eagles. That's what I said.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Steve.
So right. I can hear some people driving off the road there. No, I understand what you're saying, Ira. Yes, you're obsessed with that game. We don't have to go backwards. It was, these are games in every good team season, or really any team that goes 9-8, 10-7. They've got a couple of these real turning points, typically, unless they've been steady all year long, and few teams are. So we know what happened. The team came together. And we've talked about, you know, it's very possible that Liam Cohen's a better fit, and he certainly believes, and we talked in the last podcast, how he believes he can get the run game more diverse, and that wasn't Canales' thing. So, yeah, look, we're going to find out, Ira. Do you have anything else to say about just the perspective that you might have on Winfield and that contract? He turns 26 in a couple of weeks. Do you expect anything different from Winfield? Do you think he's somebody who's going to feel the pressure of a $22.5 million payday over the next 2 years each season? Do you think it'll change the balance of power in the locker room at all on defense? What do you think?
I'm glad you asked that, Steve. I really am, and I know Lee will back me up on this because we were in the locker room quite a bit over the last few seasons. Lee, I'll speak for myself. Winfield's a pleasure to be around. He's a pleasure. What a representative for the Bucks. I love his passion for the game, Lee, and I don't think where it could change another player's motivations and how hard they work, I don't see it at all with Antoine Winfield Jr. I don't think he's a guy that you can get jealous about, because I think everybody in that Buck locker room knows how good a player he is and how he's sort of part of the fabric of this team at such a young age. I'm glad Steve mentioned it, Lee, because if it was another type of player, I might say there's a danger there. I don't feel that in any respect regarding Antoine Winfield. Lee, do you share those sentiments?
Oh, yeah. The locker room loves the guy. He's a good dude. No, there's no jealousy involved there. If anything, there's admiration, I would believe, not jealousy. If someone's jealous of Antoine Winfield in that locker room, number one, I don't know anything about it. Number two, he shouldn't be in that locker room anymore. You know, bad, good, or indifferent, with this new contract, Winfield is as close to the face of the franchise as anybody will be outside the quarterback.
Well said. And Steve, one quick point about Winfield that could very well go unnoticed in terms of this contract. Steve, the guy who I think played the biggest role in deciding how much money to give to Winfield and whether this contract's going to be a problem is Todd Bowles. Lee, Todd Bowles was a safety his entire career with Washington, and a good one. And Bowles knows that safety position more than he knows any position on this team as a defensive coordinator. He played it. And if he had a problem with rewarding Winfield like this, it wouldn't have happened. So everybody's on board with this from light on down, especially Todd Bowles.
I would say Glazers on down.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So
Steve, I guess we'll get together after the schedule comes out.
Yeah. Two quick ones for you, Ira, just because you've got your nose to the ground. But let me first ask Lee. Lee was patrolling One Buck at minicamp like a bloodhound. He's picking up scents in the air. Lee, anything you feel fans need to understand or know beyond, you know, the stuff that they read or just any general vibe. Obviously, it's rookie minicamp. Nobody's hitting anybody. All underwear football. You know, quarterback throwing the ball is kind of a rental who isn't going to even get into the XFL. What do we need to know?
You hit the nail on the head with the quarterback. He went to Bobby Bowden University, Samford. Not Stanford, Samford. So I don't know if there's ever been an NFL quarterback from Samford.
Not Stanford, Samford.
It almost sounds like a Maxwell Smart line, but I got to clarify something I said on Ivor's last podcast that really got some people hacked off. But anyway, Braswell, and I forgot all about this, but Braswell was one of Bruce Feldman's, he was on a top 10 freak list. Bruce Feldman works the Athletic, damn good college football writer. He has a freak list where he highlights every summer the top 100 freaks, athletic freaks in college football. They could be a freak in the weight room. They could be a freak with a vertical jump. Whatever. They got to be freaks. And I think Braswell was number 9 for his strength. And I saw one play. It was a nothing play. It was just a random throwaway play. Again, underwear football. You can't hit. But he was going to get, say, a vending machine of a right tackle. That's what he'll be doing next week. He'll be working vending machines. You know, a vending machine repairman. He took this guy, and in the blink of an eye, stepped on him, totally out of the play. Like it was almost like the guy was saying out loud, "Child, please!" And he just tossed him aside with a stiff arm. Just that move he put on this kid, one arm, one hand, to shed the block and follow the ball. I was like, "Wow, okay." I mean, some things jump out at you like that really are insignificant, but it's so stunning. You're like, "Wow!" And that was one of those cases. The last time I said that at a rookie minicamp was when I saw Trey Palmer turn on the wheels, and I was like, wow. So this Braswell, he's strong. And to real quick clarify, we were talking about takeaways last week, and I said, and I guess I very poorly said it, I believe in sacks more than takeaways. I guess I didn't go back and listen to it, but someone just hammered my derriere in the comments on JoeBucksFan.com. I said I'd rather have sacks in the takeaways, the sacks prevent points. This guy, you idiot, takeaways prevent points. He's right. I guess to explain myself better, I'll use a basketball term. You ever hear the basketball cliche? A good defense doesn't go into slumps?
Yes.
That's what I believe in sacks. And what I mean by that is I firmly believe takeaways are more luck than they are skill. Every NFL team stresses takeaways. But yet, in the same breath, coaches will admit, oh, they come in bunches. You hear it all the time. Oh, they come in bunches.
Yeah.
Well, a good defense doesn't come in bunches. A good defense is consistent. They may have a bad game on defense, but a good defense won't have a slump. So if you got a good pass rusher, pretty good chance he's not going to go into a slump. That's more reliable than hoping for a fumble or hoping for a pick.
That's a good clarification, Steve, because I think it's fair to say those takeaways, they fluctuate from year to year, from team to team. And it's hard to have, Steve, it's hard to finish in the top 5 in takeaways year after year. You don't see that. It's a chart that changes usually annually. So I see Lee's point, but when you do get a takeaway, you can't underestimate the impact of it.
True.
Sure. Sage, in Jacksonville, this office of the mayor has approved, and it'll go for a vote to the city council, which they expect it to approve. Basically, the city's going to put up over $600 million, and the Jaguars are going to put up over $600 million for this $1.4 million project that will redo their stadium. And it'll close for 1 year as part of the construction. The Jaguars will play either at the Swamp or in Orlando. That stadium's only like 2, maybe 3 years older than Raymond James. And how do you think this affects the Bucks and what they may be thinking and just the whole attitude toward the stadium? Because the Bucks keep saying, oh, our stadium's great. We've made some upgrades. But in reality, it's not what other stadiums are around the league. And it's not going to get newer on its own.
Interesting, Steve. I think the Glazers have been consistent. Brian Ford, the CEO, has been very consistent. Renovations, yes. Major renovations, no. New stadium, no. At this point, I think Raymond James is about 25 years old, Lee, maybe 26. I think it's held up very well. I like some of the changes they made. I think it's fan-friendly. Lee, you know one change I would make? And I don't know if it's cost prohibitive or whatever, but Lee, those poor fans on the east side, the first couple of months of the season, I mean, that's rough, Lee.
Yeah.
That's rough. And if they could hang, you know, something over that overhang that would provide some shade, I think that'd be a huge factor because, Lee, you're in the press box with me, and we got to admit, Lee, on September 22nd, and I don't care if the game starts at 4 o'clock, but on September 22nd, Lee, we look in the middle of the first quarter, and the fans in big numbers that are on the east side, Lee, they're over there, you know, beyond the south end zone, trying to find some shade and get a beer, and that's where they stand and watch the game. Lee, they abandon their seat. I don't think that's an overstatement.
No, you're not overstating it at all. Hopefully at some point, the Bucks or the... what do they call the stadium?
The Tampa Sports Authority.
Yeah. They, hopefully someday they could do what your friend down in Miami did.
Yeah.
Put up a ceiling of some sort to help people in the shade. Steve, about the Jaguar Stadium, that stadium is actually very, very old. That's the old Gator Bowl. They just have renovated it two or three times. It still has the old concourse, the old narrow concourses. So it's actually a very old stadium. They just fix it up really well. And I know Bucks fans get mad at me for saying this. As a fan, and I've been to football games, both college and NFL, in Jacksonville as a fan. Not just media, but as a fan, sat in the stands. And I used to have season tickets to the Bucks games. I thought the Gator Bowl was significantly better than Raymond James. And this is one reason why. They hit this huge area they called the Bud Zone. It was above an end zone. It was basically a giant air-conditioned sports bar where the entire wall that faced the field was glass. So you could watch the game at the same time you'd be in air conditioning. And we know Florida, there's fans from all over. It's not just, you know, like Pittsburgh is basically Steelers fans. Washington, it's mainly Washington fans. But in Florida, it's of all colors, fans of all colors. So at Jacksonville, this sports bar, people, for whatever reason, didn't give a damn about the Jags, or they had something big going on in their fantasy team, or they had a big bet going on, or there were TVs all over with all the other games. So you could watch literally the game, you know, like, you just look out the window. There was a big, giant pane glass window. You could look out the window and watch the game in air conditioning, or if you so chose, you could watch one of the 50 TVs and catch the out-of-town game. And I thought that was a significantly better feature than Raymond James ever had and still doesn't have, to my knowledge. And why they can't do that, I don't know. But I've never been overly impressed with Raymond James. I know fans get mad at me for saying that. There's great sight lines. If you just want to go to watch a game and that's it, it's an excellent stadium. But in the year 2024, stadiums are meant to bring in the casual fan who may not really be interested in what's going on in the field. I know that appalls people, but that's one of the reasons why the NFL is so popular. They bring in all kinds of fans, not just your hardcores, but people who might watch two drives like, oh, it's time to mingle.
Interesting take, Lee. Interesting take.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the stadium had been gutted that I just considered it new. I understand that the site's the same, but I don't know. I don't know how the perspective, you're looking for the Sage's perspective on the sway to the Glazers. Oh, okay. Real quick, Ira, that you mentioned the schedule, and of course, we'll come back later this week after the schedule comes out, thanks to Bill Curry Ford again, as we heard earlier, and to Florida's Elite Restoration, floridaselite-restoration.com. Ira, last year, the Buccaneers, they got a couple of night games, primetime games, which, of course, in many ways is the ultimate sign of respect when the networks who study this stuff and want the best teams playing in the best games and are looking at talent and interest and fantasy players and all that kind of stuff. How many, what's your prediction? What are we looking at as far as night games? Of course, we're going to get a Thursday night game.
I'm thinking we're looking at three. And boy, Lee, it wasn't long ago when they were lucky to get one, but it was obligated that you got to get one.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I'm looking at three, Lee. I think they've earned it. Mayfield has a little intrigue about him. Can he repeat a career year? They signed their key players back. They're a pretty nice team, Lee. My magic number's three. We'll see if I'm right.
Lee, what do you think?
I would think three is accurate. You know, they had two last year. I would not be shocked with three, but I wouldn't be shocked if they only got two. I mean, we were just talking about this earlier in this very podcast, how the perception still is that the Bucks are a subpar team and are not worthy of other people's times. And you know what? Let's be blunt. If you don't have a star quarterback, that's what people are going to think of you, period. If you don't have a star quarterback or a first-round draft pick of a quarterback, that's what people are going to think about you.
Lee, that's a great point. I didn't even think of it. Steve, Atlanta, and I don't care if Cousins gets hurt because then Penix would be in, and he's intriguing in his own right. So Atlanta might feel a little bit of Tampa Bay's thunder. They are favored to win the division. I don't know if I agree with that, but Atlanta was down in the dumps. They only won 7 games last year. But there's a lot of interest surrounding what the hell's going on with the Dixie Chicks, Steve. So they might grab one of Tampa Bay's night games right out from under them. They might.
Yeah, well, look, we're going to see what that respect quotient is very quickly when the schedule comes out on Wednesday, as Lee said, somebody said, 2 night games last year. I think there's a good chance for 3-2 this year. Not a lot of respect, Ira, but we'll see. Maybe we get a Thanksgiving game for a change so the Sage can play a little tennis, have a little turkey, and watch his Buccaneers. All right, Ira, do you have a final thought? I still can't believe that you're out there swinging, punching, going out to dinner literally minutes after hip replacement surgery.
Well, Lee, here's the way I explain it, Lee. It might be the best compliment I've ever gotten in the business. And I don't even remember who told it to me, Lee. I really don't. But the description was a pro's pro. Lee, I don't think you get a higher compliment than that. A pro's pro. So, Lee, if I'm going to be a pro's pro, I'm not going to get a little hip issue infringing on my obligations to Buck Nation. And that's just the way it is, Lee. And we'll be back shortly to dissect this 2024 schedule. It's your local columnist signing off, and talk to you boys later.
Take it easy,
Colin, in Public's deli now, Ira. You can't walk as quick as you used to. So
there you go, baby.
He's like Bo Jackson with the hip replacement. I can't believe it. All right, Ira, we'll talk to you soon.